from the KSEV studios in Houston, Texas. This is Guns Over Texas, operating on raw talent and good looks. Our range operator, Jeff Sanford, CHL instructor, Gary Montgomery, and law enforcement contributor, Jason Berry. They're here to educate, inform, and entertain you on all things that go bang. Welcome to Guns Over Texas. Hello, Houston, and welcome back to Guns Over Texas. Jeff here, joined in studio by Gary as usual, and Jason. Gary, welcome back.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
And Jason is not here today.
He's off being a jackbooted thug.
That's right. So I know he's listening somewhere, even though he was having trouble getting the KSEV app. But it's Jason. He's bound to have a computer with him
online.
Yeah,
what he's doing.
I'm sure he's got a computer with him while he's on surveillance somewhere. So. And then, so to fill in Jason's big shoes, we have my dad, Steve. Welcome back.
Hey, yeah, great. Glad to be on. I think I'm on.
All right.
Yeah. He's on.
There's a light on, so yeah. Well, good. Welcome back, Big D. All right. So, Houston, if you have questions, comments, you want to join us today, you can call us at 281-558-5738. That's 281-558-5738. You can join in the conversation. We're talking all things that go bang today. CHL questions, legislation, anything you want to talk about is fair game. We've got a pretty lively debate going on here this evening in the studio. We recently had two major manufacturers release two brand new guns that are completely different than anything else they've previously released. Both SIG and HK, which are hammer-fired guns, or they manufacture hammer-fired guns, have come out with the striker-fired models. Now, HK has had what was that model?
Well, the this VP7? Is actually the third striker-fired gun for HK.
Yeah.
They had the VP70 in the 70s.
That's right. And then there's the
squeeze cocker. And if you ever get a chance to own one of those, don't. But but they also had the P7, which is a squeeze cocker, but also striker fired.
Yeah,
and so the new VP9 is
this is their first modern,
yeah, modern polymer. Although the VP70 was polymer,
mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's a takeoff of the P30. Uses the same magazines.
Does not fit the same holster though.
Correct. Does not fit the same holster because there were some tweaks to the frame in the developing this new gun.
Yeah, so we've got two manufacturers that are duking it out over probably a new government contract.
Somebody somewhere is probably buying some guns. That would be a pretty good guess.
They probably want striker-fired guns, and so that's why these two manufacturers have come out with their new offerings.
Yep.
So we've got HK with the VP9. Mm-hmm. And we have SIG with the P320,
yep.
Which the 320 I got to play with a whole lot last week.
Mm-hmm.
And it is basically a brand new P250.
Yes.
The P250 is, of course, the gun that's totally modular. The mm-hmm. frame comes off. You can have a small, medium, or large frame.
Right.
You can have subcompact, compact, or full-size frames and slides.
And
one
then, of
fire
course, all
control
those different
group
sizes, a group of grip, and all of those frames.
Yeah, yeah, and so, yeah. One fire control group.
Right.
That thing is
the serialized part.
Yeah, and it's so simple to look at.
Yeah.
You know, it almost makes you wonder why other manufacturers don't make guns that easy.
Well, there were some issues with the P250 when they started graduating above 9mm.
Yeah, but, you know, it seems like with a little bit of tweaking, they might be able to
fix
it.
Yeah, there's no reason they couldn't fix it, mm-hmm. but they didn't, and yet it's the same frame.
Yeah. Which is a pretty comfortable frame. Now,
it is.
Even though I've got big hands, I still prefer the small grip on the gun.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would like a size small on the compact or the full size frame. I really enjoyed shooting the 320.
His hand is bigger.
I really enjoyed shooting the 320. What I found that I liked most about it was that I fired range rounds mm-hmm. and then I fired anything from 124 grain gold dots to 147 HSTs,
mm-hmm.
and I couldn't really tell a difference between those and the just standard 115 grain range rounds, full metal jackets.
Yeah,
So it was a very comfortable to shoot. I enjoyed it, and I shot it really, really well. The trigger on the 320 is pretty much unlike anything else I've felt out there. And I was really looking forward to that VP9 coming in on Thursday. But alas, I was summoned out of town just before the UPS man showed up.
Darn. Well, so I took advantage of the fact you were gone.
You two guys.
Yes.
You two guys.
We made it a point to be there.
Yeah. Y'all had a chance to shoot the VP9, and I heard that there was a long laundry list of people that had come in to shoot it.
Yeah, that gun was dirty by the time I got my hands on it.
Yeah. So, fellas, tell me what you think about the VP9.
Well, you know, shot them side by side, and I think that they did a really great job with the gun. There's some complexities, and we've all noted that. You know, the little the bumps that are on the back of the slide
that they say are for to help ease the cocking.
Well, it probably does make it easier if you're the person that uses the pinch pull method.
Yeah.
I personally, if it were my gun, those would be removed, and they're plastic and can be removed. They literally just slide out of the slide. I think you have to remove the rear sight to do that, but they can be removed.
And for those folks out there listening right now, the pinch pull method, you basically use
thumb and your index finger to pull the slide back almost like a slingshot. Mm-hmm. And that method is fine as long as your thumb is working. However, some of us have been in enough fights that we know that sometimes our thumbs get dislocated, and then you can't do that anymore.
Well, and a lot of people who don't quite have the grip strength.
Yeah, if you don't have quite a bit of really strength in pinching between your index and thumb, then yeah, you may not be able to pull it back at all. So using the over-the-top method, almost like opening a jar, you bring your hands inboard to almost a fetal position and come over the top with your strong or support hand.
Well, I was always taught that the pinch pull method, you had to be wearing panties first.
Wow.
Hey,
there's a famous trainer who uses that system, and I'm not going to go there.
Speaking of men and ladies' underwear, we've got Jason Berry on the line.
So wow.
Let's head out.
On cue.
Jason, welcome. Thank you for joining us today.
Oh, always a pleasure, Jeff. Always a pleasure. Can y'all hear me?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Okay. I was just making sure Jeff didn't mess up and answer the phone like he always does.
Sure. All right. Now, Jason, you got to shoot the VP9 and the P320. And as I was headed out of town, you were giving me updates. Tell me what you thought.
It's a really hard call between the two of them. I actually like the trigger on the SIG better than on the H&K.
Yep.
But I thought the HK fit my hand a little bit better. But the difference being, we only have the one size frame right now for the SIG. And we all know that the SIG is the big selling point of it is interchangeable frames. Big frames, small frames, compact grip, large grip. So there should be different magazine lengths in there and different widths of grip. So I'm hoping to find a grip that's a little bit better in my hand, and maybe that'll put it up there with the HK. Shooting them, they're both incredibly accurate. They're both relatively soft shooting. I got no complaints on either one of the guns. It would be hard for me to pick one as being generally better than the other, with the exception of when I cracked them open and was looking inside of them. And HK... You know, I hate to say it, much like a Swiss watch or you know, a Mercedes or something like that, it looks very German engineered.
It's complicated.
There's a lot of parts in there, and it's not like when you crack open a Glock or even an M&P that you look in there and go, wow, there's like 15 parts in the whole fire control mechanism, if that. HK looks, now I haven't taken it all the way out of the frame to be able to tell, but it looked like there was a lot going on there. And when I took the SIG all the way down and just popped the fire control module out and set it on the desk, it looked significantly easier to deal with than the HK would be. Now, that being said, when we used to issue HKs, I rarely ever had to mess with one because they never broke. They ran really, really well. So the overcomplexity, you know, it might be an advantage in that it never does break down, but if it does, it looks like it's going to be a pain in the butt to get there and work on it.
Yeah, now, Todd Green is a professional shooter that we all follow. And his P30, he said that he was trying to break that gun, and it was I think he cracked the frame, or a big chunk came out of the frame at 90,000 rounds.
Yeah, but the gun still worked.
Like that.
Yeah.
The gun was working with a big chunk of the frame missing, but he decided for safety reasons to stop before it broke in a way that hurt him.
And I don't blame him for that. So, Jason, if you had, say, $700 disposable dollars in your fingertips, and you've got a HK VP9 and a SIG P320, which one do you buy?
And you're really putting me on the spot there. I think, man, I'm the only thing.
He would go to Shiloh and buy them both.
Yes, I would buy them both.
That's what I'm going to do.
At full retail. Now, the only issue I would have with the SIG is it's a hair thicker than the other guns. And if you're going to carry concealed, like inside the waistband, thicker is not always your friend. And the only reason it's thicker, though, is to allow the removal of the fire control module that is, in fact, the gun. To be able to have a fire control module that's not molded into the plastic and is a piece that actually lifts out and can be moved to other frames necessitates a slightly wider frame. We're not talking a huge amount of difference, but it might be 15% wider than the comparable HK or Glock. So I don't think that's going to be a big deal for a duty pistol where you're carrying it like a policeman carrying it in a regular, you know, duty holster. But if you're trying to conceal it, that could be an issue that it's a little bit thicker than the HK. I still give a slight edge to the SIG because I like the magazine release better than the HK's paddle magazine release. That would be my one complaint about the HK is the paddle mag release. Yeah.
In your opinion, which gun is going to be easier for, let's say, a large department wants to buy a load of guns? Which one is going to be better for a large department that has both men and women, both small and large?
And again, that's going to boil down to what the fanboys are in the firearms department when they because, you know, the firearms department will have to shoot all the guns, and there is some data that would say, you know, we're going to pick the best gun, but there's always going to be your personal preference and what your fanboy obsessions are. And it's, man, right now they're in such a dead heat, I couldn't pick one or the other.
Well, that's kind of like me, Jason. When I shot them side by side, I wanted to like the SIG more.
Because you're just a SIG junkie anyway. Because
I'm a SIG guy, but then I shot the HK, and it just felt a little bit better. You know, the triggers were very similar, but I'll give, like, you know, just a razor's edge to the HK just because it just felt a little better. I've managed to recoil just a little bit better. They both managed to recoil very well.
They do, indeed.
But the ergonomics of the HK just, I think, won it over. But I wish I had just shot the SIG only, and then I could rave on it.
The other thing I've noticed on those is when we broke them down, we're trying to put them back together, and in just taking apart and messing with them, we noticed the new safety features that have been added in there. You have to get the magazine out and lock the slide of the rear to take these down. They don't
on
require
the
you
SIG,
to pull the trigger.
For sure, yeah.
Well, on the SIG and on the HK, when we had it apart, we were trying to insert a magazine in it just to look at how everything interacts. Mm-hmm. And when you take the slide off, on both those guns, there's a small little plunger-type device that pops out and keeps you from being able to insert a magazine in the frame with the slide off of it.
Right.
So there's some type of safety features built in here, and I can only imagine that stems out of the tendency of police officers when taking apart their Glocks to make a loud bang sound in the office.
That's been done.
Desk pop.
They're trying to make this as idiot-proof as they can, and again, I see that as not necessarily for the average shooter on the side of the road. They're trying to entertain some type of agency traction and trying to get traction away from the M&P and Glock, which have pretty much dominated police sales in the past few years.
Do you like that new safety feature on these guns?
Especially
considering
it's
in the masses.
I've never shot my desk or put one through the wall at the office, but I can't say that has never happened in the building I've been in.
Would it make you feel a little more warm and cuddly in the building that you're in?
It may or may not be a welcome addition. Yeah, I mean, anything that makes it, you've got to design everything for the lowest common denominator. We're not designing pistols and issuing them to SEAL Team 6. Most cops are not shooters. And most people who own guns, I hate to say it, are not shooters. They buy a gun, they buy 50 rounds of ammo, and they put their lucky rabbit's foot in the glove box or in the closet. So the vast majority of people who buy guns are not taking the time to learn all the steps involved and may, in fact, cut safety steps. So if they can build a mechanical, you know, passive feature like that in there that helps keep you from messing up, I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, as you said, you know, most people do not shoot their guns, and I don't think the average person understands how much people don't shoot their guns. A few years ago, we were told that the average number of rounds put through every gun in the United States was 6. You know, so for the high volume shooters that are going to shoot between, you know, let's just say 5,000 and 25,000 rounds in a year, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of other people that are shooting none. You know, taking that gun home, putting it in the safe or in the nightstand, and leaving it there is like it's some sort of magic wand.
But we skew the statistics also. I know that I've got far more guns than I'll ever need in my lifetime, but I concentrate 90% of the time I'm shooting my Glock 17 and my Glock 26 because that's my duty gun. So if I put 5,000 rounds a year through each of those guns, that's great. And then my dad's 357 Magnum revolver that I've got in the drawer, it might get shot once every 5 years, if that. You know, so I own a lot of guns that don't get shot, and I tend to focus on the stuff that I have to carry or the stuff I have to master at that time gets a lot more attention from me.
So. Yeah,
that makes sense.
Yep.
So did you ever give us an answer, or did you hem and haw your way around it?
I hemmed and hawed my way around it.
I think he gave a slight edge to the SIG.
You just talked so much that I didn't even know what your answer was. You lulled me to sleep.
The reality is you never listen. You just heard, wah, 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 wah,
that is,
wah,
you know,
wah.
I'm going to say that is pretty accurate. That is pretty accurate.
The thanks I take for sneaking out of work to give you guys a call. Thanks a lot.
So, Jason. HK or SIG? Let's go, man. You're on the spot.
Which one do you make the most profit of in store? I'll pick that one.
They HK both come in right about the same price point.
Yeah, they do. That, and again, that's when it boils down to it for what's going to take over the more market share, the fanboy thing will come into it. But also, when you talk about total package price, of the guns might be within $20 of each other. But if HK mags are $45 a piece and SIG mags are $25 a piece, and I've got to outfit 1,000 officers with guns and magazines, I might lean towards the one with the cheaper magazines.
Well, I'll counter that, though, Jason, because and this is something we mentioned off air, and we didn't get a chance to bring it up yet, but when you buy the HK, all of the panels to change the way that gun fits in individual officers' hands are there in that package then and there.
Yes.
The question becomes, with the SIG, does that mean that the agency has to turn around and buy a bunch of, you know, small frames, medium frames for any given, if they decide they're going to standardize on the full-size gun?
If you were going to buy a big enough order, you could say, I want 100 of them with small frames, I want 100 of them with medium frames, 100 of them with large frames. I'm sure that SIG would accommodate you on that.
Yeah, and I'm
but
sure
the other
they
kicker
would.
Is the SIG comes with night sights, and the HK does not for the same price.
But does it have those phosphorescent sights? You hit them with a flashlight for 2 seconds, and you've got a charge.
It may or may not, but when you're talking night sights, some departments will have the policy written it has to have night sights, not phosphorescent flashlighty sights.
Okay.
And you're talking $75 to $100 per gun now to add on top of the HK's cost.
Yeah, that's
to
true.
To add the night sights.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure the HK would for an order, go, yeah, we'll include those.
Yeah,
yeah, I'm sure, especially if it was a big enough order for a big enough department. Because if you want to say you're the gun of the Secret Service, or you want to say you're the gun of NYPD or the SEALs, you know, sometimes they'll give the guns pretty much a cost just to get that advertising dollar in there.
Yeah.
Well, do you foresee ever changing from Glock?
If they issued us the new pistols, probably. Yeah, here's the whole thing. When you're supposed to be teaching people and you're the firearms guy at the agency, if you don't carry what they issue, sometimes that sends a bad message to the troops of you don't trust it. And why would, you know, they're giving us this, but he's carrying that. Why does he do that? And, you know, I'm doing that right now when we issue SIGs, but I bought a Glock. But a lot of our officers have bought their own Glocks, like probably 25% of them.
Yeah.
But if they issued me a new Glock, or pardon me, the new style SIG, the new style HK down the road, I'd probably carry them for a couple of years just to, A, be able to understand all the quirks to help teach people it. And they're both fine guns. I wouldn't feel unsafe with either one of them.
Okay. All right. Now, Dad?
Yeah.
HK or SIG?
Like I said, I just give a slight edge to the HK, just a very slight. I wish I hadn't shot them side by side because I would really love the SIG. But after shooting the HK, it fits my hand a little better. It's a little more ergonomic.
Now, you're a P30 owner already.
Yes, sir.
Did you find the VP9 to sit a little bit lower in your hand than the P30?
Maybe just a little bit. As a matter of fact, I really didn't notice that. I noticed that the recoil handling the recoil was easy. Mm-hmm. On both firearms, so I really didn't notice that. I was impressed with the less recoil.
Now, Jason.
Yes, sir.
Did you happen to notice that the HK, does it have a higher cut on the Tang or on the Beaver Tail than the P30?
I looked at it the other day, and now I can't remember because it's been like a week since I shot both of them. It still wasn't, neither one of them sat as low in the hand as the Glock did. But again, I think that's because of the frames, that they're trying to keep the frames interchangeable with the old magazines for the P-30 being a hammer-fired gun and the SIG P-250 is a hammer-fired gun. Those are the forerunners to both of these. Both of them needing the room and the frame for a hammer-fired mechanism. I think they kept the frames obviously the same as they were before so they could use interchangeable magazines, but that also means that it's got a little bit higher bore axis than a Glock. But I think that's just the nature of bringing a pre-existing design and transferring it from a hammer fire to a striker.
All right. Now, Jason, do you need to get back to work, or are you going to hang out for a minute?
If that's the fancy way of getting rid of me, I'm going to head on back to work. But I do appreciate you taking the call, and I will. I don't know if I'll be back home next week or not, but I will try to see if I can make it back next week.
All right, Jason. Thanks a lot. Hold on, Houston.
Stay safe.
All right, bye.
Hold on, Houston. More Guns Over Texas coming up next. Welcome back to Guns Over Texas, Houston. The bump music this week is just because she can. There is no theme for my mom in the producer's booth today. She is just playing what she feels like listening to. So I will apologize in advance for what's sure to happen in the near future. No, you're doing good in there, Mom.
Hey, be careful. And, you're walking on thin ice, boy.
And I'm number one. Okay, from the producer's booth. All right. So we're talking the VP9, HK VP9 versus the SIG P320. Something that I felt on that P320 that was totally unlike anything I felt on SIG was that trigger. It is a very, very different trigger. And it almost feels like when you take your finger and you press a button on like your alarm pad at your house or something like that. That's exactly what it feels like to me, that the break of that trigger feels like you're pressing a button instead of actually rolling through.
Yeah, well, that's the thing about the Glock is that, you know, a lot of people, they tried, one of the first mods they try to do to the Glock is make it more like the 1911, so it has a definitive break, which characteristically a stock Glock trigger almost feels like you're rolling over a speed bump. Mm-hmm. So it does stack to that 5.5 pounds, but then it rolls off as it moves over the break down as the striker is released. And then there's a characteristic period of over travel after that, a few millimeters worth. And that does give it a distinct feel. But if you turn around and shoot this HK or even the new SIG, they both stack almost. I would actually, and I don't know if you guys have shot a lot of old 1911s that had the 7 or 8 pound triggers mm-hmm. in them, but it's more of that definitive. Okay, here's a stop point. We're at the break dawn. We apply that extra pound or so to break over that, and then there's a very, very short over travel on them.
And you should, as you train, find that spot.
Yeah,
yeah, find that spot.
And it makes
every time.
It. And with those guns, they're easy to find.
Yeah,
so. So I think that is going to contribute long-term to better shooting for a lot of people.
How about the VP9 trigger? I've heard that's unlike anything that
same thing.
HK
it's I actually would compare it to a P7. The P7 had a pretty crisp trigger on it. But it is different. It just is. Mm-hmm. But that's the thing. Both of these guns, the 320 and the VP9, they both come to a very definitive stack, and I've forgotten what their claimed trigger weights are. But there's probably somewhere in that 5.5 to 6 pound range is what it felt like.
It felt lighter than a standard Glock to me.
I didn't notice them to be any lighter, just that they were crisp in terms of the way they broke.
Yeah, they broke just a little sooner than I thought, so it took a little getting used to. And that's what made me think it was lighter, because they did break a little bit sooner than I thought.
Yeah.
Now, Gary, we were talking about the tang or the beaver tail on the gun.
Yeah, comparing it to the P30. The P30 almost sweeps up and continues to sweep up as you go towards the rear of the frame. And so the VP9 seems to have a deeper cut that doesn't continue sweeping up. It almost seems to sweep straight back. So, you know, it almost seems like your hand's getting deeper into the gun, and it probably is, because what I felt was almost a definitive pressure on the top of the webbing of my hand between the thumb and the index finger or trigger finger. And so I felt that, and I could almost argue that that's almost, in a sense, keeping the muzzle down. If you think of that web of your hand being a fulcrum point, that tang is there pressing down on your hand, so it doesn't allow the gun to roll up quite as much. So the gun shot really flat. That was definitely one thing I noticed. For such a short gun, it shot fairly flat. And you know, I didn't have my timer with me when I shot it yesterday. I didn't think to bring it. But, it was definitely a quick gun. Now, I think that the SIG's trigger, as far as when you catch the reset, when you catch the link, which meaning that you're releasing that trigger after the slide is cycled, when you feel that trigger reset on the SIG, you're on the sear. With the HK, there's a little bit of movement to get back to the sear. So you pull it out, as you're releasing it forward movement, you feel it click, you actually have to move the trigger back to the rear again, maybe a millimeter, millimeter and a half, to be back on the sear. It's not much, but it's a little bit of a difference. It is nowhere near as pronounced as what you would see in a traditional SIG or HK hammer-fired pistol that's double action, single action. The trigger has to move several millimeters to get back on the link or get back on the sear. So in that regard, I think that it's going to be a faster trigger. Like I said, it's a very crisp trigger. That was huge to me compared to that rollover that you have of the Glock. Mm-hmm. So it becomes very easy to prep that trigger for each shot, for follow-up shots, to make quick transitions, that sort of thing, and predictably know when that gun's going to discharge. So, I mean, I will not say anything necessarily bad about either one of them. I liked them both a lot, and it's not often anymore that I find a whole lot that I like about new guns. And there's still nothing here that to me is earth-shattering. It's an evolution of stuff that's already been out there. In SIG's case, it's more earth-shattering than not, because they've never had a striker-fired pistol before, and they have done a really good job of building this one. Looking at the gun, you can tell that the P320 is a retrofit. I mean, you can look at the slide and tell that used to be a 250 slide. It's been modified. You can look at the frame and tell that's still a 250 frame, but that fire control system is different. And like Jason said, yes, it looks very simple just looking at it from the outside. I think that the HK looks more complex because the parts are exposed. But I honestly think if we actually could take them apart, they're probably very similar. Just the orientation of where that final lever that's releasing the sear moves, they're 180 degrees apart in that sense. But, I think they both got winners there.
The picture of the VP9 has a huge, huge hump on the back of the gun. This is something that you hear a lot of people complain about the Glock.
Yeah, but that's just that one particular panel, because there's two other sets.
Side by side and rear, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so you've got the two side panels and the rear panel, and you can change those out on the HK. And that, to me, is the advantage of the HK. As an individual buyer, I get that an agency can buy whatever it wants and order 100 this, 100 that, whatever. But with HK, when you buy it for that individual officer, they can fit it for themselves right then and there. They don't have to go back to the armorer or go back to the issuer and say, hey, this frame isn't working for me, let me swap it out. It's there for that officer. And I would think that that's potentially an advantage either way, in the sense of an individual buyer such as myself or an agency, because you don't have to go through the time of reissuing these parts. Granted, it's not a serialized part in the case of the SIG, but I don't have to keep all those extra parts on hand. It's the individual officer's responsibility. It's all in that one package. And if I take it back from that officer and go issue it to another officer later, I don't have to go hunting for parts or go hunting for anything new.
Mm-hmm.
So,
now, HK has a trigger that you can get on their guns called the Light LEM, and that's a law enforcement trigger.
Yes.
It's considered a double action only, mm-hmm. but it's such a soft press. There's some take up, and then you,
right.
you once it breaks, you actually do have a reset, mm-hmm. and then there's a little bit of take up again.
Yes.
Now, Dad, you've got a lot of experience on the Light LEM from HK. Mm-hmm. Do you prefer that system where you've got take up on the trigger and you can really determine what you're going to do with that shot, whether or not you're going to place that shot, gives you a little bit of time, or do you prefer the new VP9 trigger?
Well, that's a good question, because I've been shooting hammer fired pistols, you know, all my life. Revolvers, I started with that, and of course I carry the SIG 226, which hammer fires double action.
Yeah, you've got an M&P, but
you... I got an M&P, but I very seldom shoot it.
Yeah,
I like it. You know, it's just a different thing. I do like. That double action where I can see the hammer. If I'm going to take my time and see that hammer come back, I can tell you exactly where it's going to break, and I can prep that hammer, that trigger, right to that point right before it breaks. And sometimes I shoot just as well double action as I do single action, but that's because I've trained with that. I've shot a million shots that way. If somebody's just starting out, then a striker fire might be best for them, where the trigger pull is the same all the time. I prefer to have the hammer. I can see it. It just feels good, and I like the hammer fired better, even though, you know, I like these two triggers and two pistols very much. It's just a different animal. It's what you get used to. It's your personal preference.
All right, Houston, if you have questions, comments, you want to get involved with Guns Over Texas, you can give us a call at 281-558-5738. That's 281-558-5738. Gary, IT manager for Guns Over Texas Radio. How else can people get in touch with
us? You can also reach us at Facebook/Guns Over Texas Radio. You can also reach us at GunsOverTexasRadio.com. So if you've got a question and don't want to be on the air, send it through one of those avenues.
Now, GunsOverTexasRadio.com, we're about to become a lot more active on that, as we're going to be filming a lot of reviews and videos to post on GunsOverTexasRadio.com, which will then be posted to Guns Over Texas Radio on Facebook.
Yes.
So you can double your viewing pleasure by liking the Facebook page and by putting GunsOverTexasRadio.com on your favorites page. So if you have a gun that you want to see reviewed, you want to see it shot, you want to get our opinion on it, you can send us an email, Gary@GunsOverTexasRadio.com, yep. Jason@GunsOverTexasRadio.com, or even Jeff@GunsOverTexasRadio.com.
Because he does check it now, apparently.
I do. We will get that posted up as soon as we can. So we look forward to really doing some more work on that website. All right, so Gary, did you give us a VP9 versus P320? What is going into your holster first?
Probably the VP9 would be first. Mm-hmm. Like I said, the fact that all of the panels are there so that I can fit the gun to my own needs without having to wait to go buy another frame or anything like that, it's all there in one package. It's not that I don't like SIG. I think that SIG has a very good product. The fact that all of those adjustments are there and in one package and I don't have to go buy anything else, to me, makes the VP9 the better choice. Now, having said that, the question was whether or not it would replace my Glock. And right now, I don't think it's quite there for me. If I did not own a Glock, then I would definitely consider it. But will I replace my Glock? I'm not quite there yet.
How is it in terms of size compared to your 19? Your 19 is your daily carry.
Yeah, well, my 19 is my daily carry.
Dual wielding 19.
And well, that's the thing is that, you know, so the P30 and the VP9 are both 15 round shooters, and this gun's like a quarter inch longer and or quarter inch taller in overall height, and therefore the length of the grip compared to the 19, quarter to maybe 3/8 of an inch. Well, that's a quarter, 3/8 of an inch that I don't have to worry about sticking out the back of my shirt when I'm wearing inside a waistband holster or otherwise concealing it. Of course, And the thing is that in looking at them, that extra length is made up in the HK partially in the slide. It's a taller bore axis. That's where some of it is, and then some of it is just plainly the grip. And so between those two areas, it ends up being a taller gun. But I don't know that I consider it to shoot any softer than the 19. I did not shoot my 19 side by side with it. I had nothing but carry ammo with me and didn't want to swap out. But I would say, having shot the 19 quite a bit, right now it feels comparable. But I think the 19 might shoot a little bit flatter. But the feel of the HK I like a lot. Now, one thing that's weird is HK has these paddle magazine releases. To me, that the current release is a big improvement over the USP that all these guns they descend from. Mm-hmm. The USP had a paddle release, but it was engineered such that when you insert the magazine, it would move forward and then back as the magazine passed by it. And what would happen is it would catch the webbing on my finger and pinch it. So I hated HKs for that reason. This new gun doesn't have that issue. Shockingly enough, though, HK says that you're supposed to use your index finger, your trigger finger, to operate that paddle. I don't know what engineer, you know, nobody who's a shooter came up with that idea. It's asking for trouble if you think about it, because it's putting your finger dangerously close to the trigger bow, or actually you have to sweep past the trigger to get there. So if ever you're in a rush or get that confused, that trigger feels an awful lot like the paddle.
But, hey, this is also not such a bad thing if you consider a lot of people with smaller hands have to rotate, really turn
that
on that gun to get to use their thumb.
I get that. I would rather them use their support hand thumb if that's the case. I just think that trying to move your trigger finger back into that area to get to that paddle is a recipe for disaster. That's my only beef with HK's recommended mode of operation for that paddle. But otherwise, you know, the position doesn't work, isn't a problem for me with my thumb. But yes, I do have gargantuan thumbs. So.
Yeah. Now, Dad, how about you? Do you, when you carry your P30, when you shoot your P30, or I'm sorry, you are carrying a P30.
Yeah.
And that's an N40.
And a 40.
And this is something that really surprised me when I opened up the SIG, and then when I, you know, looked at a little bit more into the VP9, is that they are, like you said, 15-round guns, full-size guns.
Yeah.
When a full-size Glock or a full-size M&P, you're going to have 17 plus 1.
Yeah.
And then in 40, you'll have 15 plus 1.
Correct.
So I was really surprised that they didn't find room to jam a couple extra rounds.
Well, like
in
I
there.
Said, with the VP9, they wanted to maintain compatibility with the P30 magazines.
Mm-hmm.
And with the P30, it was kind of like, you know, I'm not sure what market they were necessarily looking for, although that was a limitation of the fact that the P30 was a hammer-fired gun.
Mm-hmm.
And so there just wasn't room to push that magazine that much further up into the gun like you do on the Glock.
Now, Dad, when you operate your P30, do you use your index finger or do you use your thumb for the magazine release?
Well, it's a double single, so I use my right thumb for the for the decocker, and I use my index finger to release a mag. I'm having to think about it because I don't shoot it that much. The thing about the HK that I like, the one that I carry is very, you know, has the same ergonomics as the BP9. The grip just has a really, really good feel. Fits in the hand, you know, and that's the most impressive thing about it. That's what drew me to it.
Yeah. And, you know, with the P30, the HK45, they have such nice ergonomics. And I can't believe that the USP is in that, it's made by that same manufacturer.
Remember that the USP
feels like you're taking an old telephone.
Yeah.
Or like a payphone.
But it comes back to
shooting
an evolution
of
design. Yeah, but it comes back to an evolution of design. So the USP came out in the 90s.
Yeah.
That gun's been around a long time. And it was designed for the U.S. market. Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of things that people pointed out and said, hey, this is great. Grip angle's cool. But here's these things you need to fix. And along the way, that's how we got the P2000. Then after the P2000 came out, they went, hey, that's great. But here's some things we need to fix. And that's how we got the P30. And then, you know, with the P30, you went, okay, you finally got the hammer fire thing squared away. You finally got a halfway decent gun. There's one problem. It needs to be striker fired. and here we are with the VP9.
Voila, years later, and yeah, people mean, are finally getting what they want.
Almost 20 years later, so it took a while.
All right, Houston, we're going to take a quick commercial break, but we'll be right back with more Guns Over Texas.
Feeling my way through the darkness, guided by a beating heart. I can't tell where the journey will end, but I know where to start. They tell me I'm too young to understand. They say I'm caught up in a dream. Well, life will pass me by if I don't open up my eyes. So that's fine by me. So wake me up when it's all over, when I'm wiser and I'm older. All this time I was finding myself and I didn't know I was
Welcome back to Guns Over Texas, Houston. If you want to get involved in the show or if you have questions, comments, whatever, you can give us a call at 281-558-5738. That's 281-558-5738. So let's go out to the phone lines and talk to old Chuckleberry and Crosby. Chuck, welcome back to Guns Over Texas. What's happening?
You guys are killing me. You know I'm going to have to get both the VP9 and the 320.
Well, we recommend it. Go to Shiloh.
And there's nothing wrong with doing that, and I'm sure Jeff will happily sell them to you.
There's some method to this madness. Number one, I've got a ton of SIG 250 stuff, and all that's interchangeable with the 320. And I like the fire control system on the 350, and I can change out those shells in 2 seconds flat. Now, the shells are dirt cheap, by the way. And if you buy the two sum kits, they throw in, I think, two shells with them. So those shells, you know, you wouldn't have any heartburn at all taking a Dremel tool and shaping it just exactly the way you wanted it or whatever. Because, like I say, those things are just dirt cheap. Number two, thing on the VP9, and one of the things that I really like about all the HKs is I like that paddle mag release. I've got arthritis so bad in my right hand, I would literally carry the VP on my right side and the 320 on my left because I can punch out the mag release with my left index finger. And I don't know, like I say, I've studied that 350 fire control. I can literally completely dismantle that sucker in my sleep in nanoseconds. So I'm pretty happy with it.
Now, are you saying the 250 or the 320?
The 250.
Okay.
And the 320, I haven't had a chance to really get into, and I'm sure it's going to be significantly different.
It's really close. It's really similar.
Like I say, once you've torn, the only real trick, number one, there's a little bit of a trick to getting that sucker out of the shell. Number two, there's one spring that you've got to be careful that you don't screw up and knock that thing out of position, because unless you've got another one to compare it to so that you can say, oh, that's the way that sucker fits.
Yeah, it'll lead to a very frustrating day.
Yeah, it's weird. Once you see it, you know, I mean, if you've got one sitting beside you to look at, I mean, it's a simple piece of cake. But if you don't have one to look at, you'll go nuts trying to figure out how did that sucker, you know, fit in there.
You know, Chuck, you just reminded me of something on the VP9, and I didn't mention this. There is a spring on the right-hand side, the ejection port side of that grip, that is a wire-type spring that's connected to the trigger bar. I hadn't looked at it deeply enough to really pick it apart, but it reminds me of the Ruger SR9. And the SR9 has a similar spring. It is not a wire spring in that particular gun, but I have seen that particular spring pop out into the magazine well such that it impeded the movement of a magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, probably not an issue, but it's something that I need to look at further because I was curious to know if it was that spring or another coil spring that's in the impact block in the frame. That is actually your trigger return spring, and I'm not sure which is which. But it is an added complexity that I'm like, I don't know if that really needs to be there or not. But you know, I'm not an engineer. It's just it's something I noticed.
I mean, SIGS is or H&K. I mean, that stuff is wonderful, but I just have more confidence in the fire control on the SIG because I understand that I've got a lot of tinker time. With the 350, and I understand how all that works.
Chuck, do you load your own ammo?
I used to. I even loaded 28 gauge back when I was into serious hand loading. Unfortunately, I lost all that stuff. I had it all in storage in Pennsylvania when I went off to the first Gulf War. When I finally got back to the States and went to try to get my stuff out of storage, son of a gun, they had problems with break-ins. All of my reloading gear. I mean, I had, I had center fire, I had shot shell, I had tons of.
Yeah, I just figured. Yeah, I figured you for you being the kind of guy that would roll your own. So
well, when I was married, it was a great hobby because it was something that you could do.
She could get you out of the house.
Well, no.
You just ignore her. Nag. I'm going to just sit here and run this press.
I'll tell you what. My ex and I got into skeet shooting, and I was never that much of a shotgun guy. I was always rifle and pistol, and she skunked me for a while till I finally caught up with her. But, like I say, I was reloading a lot of shot shells, and I love 28 gauge. If you ever get your hands on a really nice 28, oh, my God, there's nothing like it, especially if you get into something like a woodcock pops up in front of you.
Chuck, let's stay modern day, man.
Yeah, let's stick to the VP9 and the 320.
All right. Hey, Chuck, okay,
well,
come on by.
Actually, this is going to be heresy, but instead of the VP9, I would go back to the P30 long slide. That's what I'd carry on my right side. I like the external hammer. I like knowing... especially when I'm reholstering, I like to be able to put my thumb on that holster, that hammer. I feel comfortable with that. Yeah. And I think
that's reasonable.
If you got the P30 with the LEM, I think you'd have a really sweet, especially that P30L. I agree
with you on that one. I shot one a lot this weekend, and it is a ton of fun. Chuck, thanks a lot for calling. We appreciate you, as usual, here at Guns Over Texas. All right, now let's go to Will in the Museum District. Will, welcome to Guns Over Texas. What's happening, Will?
Hi, guys. Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, sir. What can we do for you?
I'm currently shooting or got a 300 Blackout AAC upper with the Spikes Tactical lower.
Mm-hmm.
Don't currently own a 223/556.
Okay.
Do you have that? Do you have the 9-inch upper for the AAC?
No, I've got the 16.
Okay.
I probably need to get the tack stamp and the truss and get that done eventually.
Or you get one of those SIG arm stabilizing braces and slap that on there.
Yeah.
But it has to be registered as a pistol.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. And because I don't want to be stopped and go through that drama.
Yeah.
And I fully well understand why that would be.
Yeah.
But I've got the AAC upper in the 16. And I have the Ruger. I don't know if you're familiar with the Ruger Scout rifle in the 308.
Yeah, really cool.
Love that gun. Have really got a chain sling on it. Have taken the put the extended. Picatinny on top, so I can put a, instead of using a scout scope, I've got something else up there. like the 308, that thing, you know, it's a surprising little gun. It shoots incredibly well. I've taken it out to 400 yards and had some really good groups with it, surprisingly, for a short barrel gun. But was wondering, you know, I've got the 308, 300 blackouts. It's a good round, but it just doesn't reach out this far. It's, at least everything I'm reading. I haven't taken it out past 300, really, but thought I'd get you guys to kick it around. I'm thinking about selling the 300 blackout and going back to a 223 and keeping the 308.
You know, I guess you're going to get different opinions on this. I don't know if Jeff and I are going to be in agreement. We shot that blackout that last time we went to Mazunga together. And, yes, you can shoot to 300 yards with it. But I personally would probably stick with 5.56. That's just me.
Yeah, and, you know, keep in mind that was a piecemeal rifle that we did have to do some work on it.
Yeah,
just
even
to get
so,
it
was just getting that bullet out to 300. It was quite a bit of a holdover to get to 300.
Yeah, well, you know, I was using it this weekend out at Mazunga. And, you know, granted, I've got the 9-inch barrel on mine, so that is definitely not a reach out and touch something barrel.
Yeah.
But I was putting shots on target at 50 yards and spinning the swinger on the Silhouette with it.
Yeah.
But then I'd try to go out to 100 yards, and I was amazed at how far off I was when I was so on at 50.
Yeah.
So it was really surprising to me.
Yeah.
So, Houston, that is going to lead us to our first commercial, or our long commercial break before hour number two. Now, Will, stick tight, because we'll talk more about 5.56 versus 300 blackout. So hold on tight, Houston. More Guns Over Texas up next.
From the KSEV studios in Houston, Texas, this is Guns Over Texas. Operating on raw talent and good looks, our range operator Jeff Sanford, CHL instructor Gary Montgomery, and law enforcement contributor Jason Berry. They're here to educate, inform, and entertain you on all things that go bang. Welcome to Guns Over Texas.
Welcome back to hour number two of Guns Over Texas, Houston. This is Jeff, Gary, and my dad, Steve, in studio today. So before we went on the long break, Will in the Museum District was calling and asking about our opinion on 5.56 versus 300 blackout. So, Will, you still with us?
Still here, guys. Yeah. Thanks.
All right. Now, I am new to the 300 blackout game. Only had it for a couple of months now.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you that ammo is expensive, and that's why I really don't shoot it a lot.
Yeah,
and at the range, you know, I may buy a box here and there, but especially if I've got some Freedom ammo there, because it's a lot cheaper than anything else I can find. But haven't really run into any issues, although I did have quite a catastrophic failure this weekend shooting, where I had 2.5 cartridges trying to go in the same area and had to strip everything and get those out of there.
But I wouldn't, you know, just looking at the cartridge itself and its performance, 300 blackout is like 300 whisper, and it's designed to be primarily designed for suppressed application, generally 100 yards or less.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's what you're doing, then it's...
And, you know, come to think of it, when I had the problems, I wasn't running the can on it.
Yeah.
Which about blew my eardrums out, by the way.
Yeah. But that's the thing, is that looking at that envelope, that performance envelope, if that's what you're doing and you're doing it on a regular basis, then it's fine. But 5.56, you know, it's not a 1,000-yard cartridge, but it's a 300-meter cartridge.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen it, in fact, at Mazunga, we've seen it kill deer quite well out to 150 yards.
Yeah.
And so...
Pretty good on a big old Barbado, too.
Yeah. So, I mean, it depends on what you're planning to do with it, Will. I mean, so I guess my question to you in deciding which one you should do is, how do you plan to use it?
And those are fair questions. I was looking... Part of the reason I got the 300 blackout was to take down hogs and some deer, something I could shoot a little more ethically. But with that, now that I've got the 308, I can, you know,
yeah,
I can go for an elk.
you can. I'll say this. You know, a lot of guys are shooting hogs with 300 blackout, and I think it does just fine. But again, it you just have to decide what are the ranges you're going to engage it at, and how you're going to do it. You can certainly suppress a 5.56, and it will still work just fine. So it, you know, we've definitely seen 5.56 take deer, and deer every bit as big as a hog. Now, it depends on the hog. Now, if you're shooting a 400-pound hog, then, yeah, I want a bigger. In fact, if you're shooting a 400-pound hog, I want the 308, if right. That makes sense.
Right. No, and that scout rifle does about everything I want it to do.
Yeah.
The 5.56 would be end up either for home defense or for shooting smaller, you know, smaller game.
Yeah. And if you're thinking that in smaller game, I would probably lean towards a 5.56. And the big thing with the 5.56 is just it for me would be availability.
Right.
You know, it's not that you can't build a 300 blackout rifle that works just fine. I've seen plenty of them. Noveski builds them. Daniel Defense, and I know some guys who built some guns themselves that have run just fine. But it's just my personal thing. I like 5.56. Mainly because it's availability, lower cost. We can still suppress it if we want to. If we need a heavier bullet, we can go to a 75 grain or an 80 grain bullet. If you still want to work in a 5.56 magazine, then probably 72 grain or less, like Hornady Tap works just fine.
Right.
That's just my opinion.
Will, are you going to be getting a suppressor?
You know, I've been kicking that around pretty hard, and I think I may. One of the things I'm thinking about doing is just keeping the AAC upper and taking that 300 blackout barrel out and putting in a 223 5.56 barrel in it, just dropping that, just switching up barrels.
Well, I mean, you can certainly do that. It's just, you know, if you have the tools to do it, then go for it. But it's easier to just buy an upper. And then you just have that other upper on the hand. And if you decide, hey, you know what, this week I want to shoot 300 blackout, then you can swap it out.
And if you get a suppressor, just get one that mounts onto a muzzle brake, and that way you can get a 223 muzzle brake and a 300 blackout muzzle brake, and one can, two rifles, you're good to go.
Right. Any uppers you suggest in the 5.56, 223? I mean,
I'm real partial to Daniel Defense and Bravo Company. Not that Noveski doesn't build a great upper. It's just that I think they're a little pricey.
Proud.
Yeah, I think they're a little pricey, and I don't think that their quality exceeds what I've seen from Bravo Company or Daniel Defense lately.
I'm right there with Gary on those two companies.
Right. I've been taking a look at both Daniel Defense and the Bravo, and I thought about a Spikes perhaps, but yeah. I think.
And actually, forgot to mention it, Colt's now selling uppers.
They are.
So if you wanted to buy a Colt upper, you can do that too.
That's news. Great. Yeah. Well, guys, I appreciate the help, and you're helping me narrow it down, and I'm glad you guys are on the airways. This is my first time to hear you guys and call in, and so I really appreciate it. Thanks.
Oh, hey, thanks a lot, Will. We appreciate you listening, and we definitely appreciate you pitching into the show and giving us a call.
Yeah, I'll be listening a lot more. Thanks.
And if you can also go to gunsovertexasradio.com,
we're going to
be doing some videos up there.
And we will be doing videos, and we post the podcast up there nightly.
I'll be looking for them. And I'm an old Glock guy, so my vote's Glock.
Thanks a lot.
You're welcome, dude.
We appreciate you calling.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Bye-bye.
All right. It's always good to have first-time callers in.
Indeed.
And at the range, I really enjoy getting to meet all of our listeners out there. I met a couple of really good guys last week, and I meant to bring them up on last week's show, and I completely forgot in the excitement that was Charles Cotton versus everybody else.
Yeah.
Special thanks again to Charles and Grisham and everybody else, Terry Holcomb, who participated last week.
Who were the two guys?
Houston Reloading.
What was I getting to?
The two guys.
Shout out. Gary and Brent, really good guys, listeners, and they came in and got to meet him, and we hung out for a little while, and just really good folks. So it always means a lot to me when I get to meet the people who listen to our show and who play with us on Facebook and such. So y'all come into the range. We love having you at Shiloh Shooting Range, and make sure that we know that you're a listener. So I like to meet all you guys. Now, also, I got to meet the good folks from Houston Reloading Supply last week, that was 2 weeks ago when they came in. Ed and Sherry, really fantastic people. You know, there's some people that you just want to spend your money with, and they are certainly those kind of people. If you are having trouble finding your reloading supplies, check out Houston Reloading Supply. I don't have the phone number on me at the moment, but you can easily find it at their website. And just incredibly nice people.
They can be reached at 832-220-6053.
Yeah, and apparently the last time I talked to them, they had a lead on some more powder and primers and such, and they were going to be making a 3,000-mile round trip to go get this.
It. Yeah.
And so they are going above and beyond. So
yeah, as reloaders will tell you, that's powder, especially lately, has been really hard to find.
Yeah,
you can find oddball powders like Powder Valley and all these guys that everybody traditionally buys their stuff through. They'll have stuff, but it's oddball caliber. You know, 50 BMG powder, and like, I can't load 45 with that, and I can't load 38 special. Well, I probably could, but only once. it's just they haven't had good powder availability. So the fact these folks are stepping up and making that powder available locally is a real huge benefit to the local community. So hats off to them for doing that.
Not only that, they're just, once again, tremendously nice people. So, keep in mind, their prices are actually lower than what we see on GunBroker and some of these other auction sites, and they are significantly lower. Yet those other people that actually have the powder and the primers and that are selling it on auction sites and stuff, they're not making a 3,000-mile round trip to go pick that up. So if it's a little bit more expensive than it was back in 2007, we'll just keep in mind what they're having to go through to get it.
And what it's going to be.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's head out to Southeast Houston and talk to Benny. Benny, welcome to Guns Over Texas. What do you say?
Hey, guys. Do you guys have any experience with the Colt 6951, which is a 9mm carbine?
New production or old production?
Yeah, I just ordered it this week. So that sounds like new production.
quite honestly, I have not seen new production guns. They weren't common for a while. Everybody was building 5.56, and so that was where everybody was concentrating time. But back in the day, that was one of the hot little things to have. And my primary experience with it was actually the full auto version at a range that shall remain nameless, where I was an instructor at one point. We had one as a rental gun, and it was a lot of fun. It really was. Again, this is a full auto thing only, but you could feel that trigger reset under that auto sear, and it hurt. But otherwise, it's a blowback design, dead nuts, simple, generally works. I think
they're reliable.
It was. It's hard to really screw up that system because, like I said, it's a blowback system as opposed to being gas operated like you would have in a 5.56. So the only thing is, I don't know if this is still the case, but it was like a modified Uzi mag is what they used.
Yeah, that's what I read. That's what I read.
Now, Colt may be producing new magazines. If they are, stock up on them, because when they stop making them, they're going to be worth a whole bunch of money.
Now, let me ask you something. Yes, I have a LWRC SPR, and it has the where you put the little pieces of rail on the front. Is there a thing I can put on this one like that where I don't have to have a full quad rail?
If you spent LWRC money, then I'm sure you can find something.
Yeah. So they do have them out there?
Well, the 9mm carbine is basically built on an AR-15 platform, so AR-15 furniture should fit it.
It should.
But okay. Would it be commercial?
Yeah, actually it should. If it'll fit, the 9mm, I don't know if they changed anything with like the Delta Ring 4 or anything like that on it. The one that we had was basically still a normal 5.56 upper. We just had a 9mm barrel torqued in it and therefore didn't have a gas tube. So I'm not sure on the current guns. Like I said, I have not seen any of the current guns. But my suspicion is that it's still built to the same spec, so probably anything that'll fit any of the other Colts will fit it just fine.
Okay. So stocked up on magazines, though.
Yeah, I mean, that's always a good idea to buy magazines, period.
Yeah, but now, when a lot of people say they're going to go stock up on magazines, they will buy two or three magazines.
No, I'm more
when
I'm
Gary
more like
and I say stock up on magazines, that means go use your savings account to buy as many as you can.
Oh, darn. But you mean like they won't make them anymore? What?
Well, you know, with the carbine, like I said, there's been a time period where they just weren't manufacturing them for a while. And some of that was, you know, the aftermath of the crime bill of the 90s, but some of it's also just it has to do with demand.
And yeah, they're not popular.
Yeah, and so Colt will only make a few of them at a time just to meet what they think is their perceived demand, and then move back to producing the 5.56.
So where would I find more magazines?
You know, you can look with the dealer you're buying it through and see if they've got them. And of course, there's, you know, all of the various gun broker and I think it's magazines.com. I don't know if that one's still around, but there used to be a website called magazines.com that just sold magazines, and that's all they sold.
44mag.com usually has a lot of stuff too.
Yeah. So,
all right, guys.
Yep.
Well, I appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
That LWRC, man, that sucker there, you cannot make it stop working.
Yeah,
they are fine. They are some.
Which, interestingly enough, that's who bought them, was Colt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They are some heavy fat boys, but they
are heavy.
That piston system is a heavy rifle to sling and carry around with you all day.
Yeah.
But, man, they run like a top, and the fit and finish is second to none.
And you can shoot it hundreds of rounds, and it's clean. The guts. Everything's clean inside it.
Yeah, it is. You definitely get what you pay for. So okay, keep it in the family and get you a little Colt 9mm carbine.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Benny. We appreciate you calling Guns Over Texas. All right, and her ears must have been ringing because Sherry with Houston Reloading is giving us a call. Sherry, welcome back to Guns Over Texas.
Hi, Jeff. How are you?
We are fantastic, Mama.
Great. Ed and I just wanted to call and thank you all for all the advertising you're doing for us. Y'all are great people, and we truly appreciate it.
Well, if you keep on doing good things, we certainly don't mind giving shout-outs to people that treat our customers as we would want to be treated.
It all comes back.
Yes, ma'am. And so how has business been for you?
Well, we're doing real good on rifle powders. Pistol powders are still pretty dry, but we're doing everything in our power that we can to get what we can for our customers.
When I saw y'all a couple weeks ago at the range, you said that y'all were y'all had a line on some powder out of town and were getting ready to make a 3,000-mile round trip to go pick it up. Did y'all go do that?
We're not yet. We're just waiting for the word to say that they got their shipment, and we will be gone.
Well, that is dedication, and shooters all over town are thankful for that.
Well, we appreciate each and every one of our customers. I tell you, we have a great group of customers, and I just can't tell you how much we appreciate each and every one of them.
I thought it was hilarious. Y'all came into the range the other day, and there were only a few guys in the lobby at the time because it was middle of the week, middle of the day. And I think there were you and Ed came in, and there were probably four or five guys in the range at the time in the lobby, hanging out in the lobby, and all of them were customers of yours.
Exactly. Exactly. Yes, they're just fantastic group of people. And, you know, we just all stick together and help each other out. There's many times Ed and I don't make a penny on an item, but we're doing what we can for our customers.
Yes, ma'am. Now, Sherry, you want to give out your phone number so people can give you a call and find out what you got in stock?
Absolutely. It's 832-220-6053. That's 832-220-6053. I do want to mention our website is not up to date. I would rather spend my day online searching for product than trying to keep up with the website. So don't go by the website. If everybody would sign up for the newsletter, then what we do is as we get shipments in, we send out a newsletter and letting everybody know what we've received.
Great. Do you have that marked on your website, like homepage, big bold letters, sign up for the newsletter?
You know, I do have it posted on there, but a lot of people they're just looking at the powders and not going by.
I understand. It's just like the people that walk into the range with a gun in hand, loaded gun in hand, right past the four signs that say,
don't do that.
Don't do that.
Don't do that. That's right. They just see powder and get excited.
That's right. Everybody's just ready to shoot. Gunfire makes us, you know, lose our minds temporarily.
That's right.
So with excitement and pleasure. So,
right. Well, Sharon, we just wanted to tell you we appreciate it. We enjoyed meeting you, and we can't wait to get together with you again.
Well, thanks a lot, Sherry. We appreciate you calling, and you guys are welcome at the range anytime. Come on by and see us.
Okay, Jeff. Take care.
Thank you. All right. I started looking up that Colt 60, the 6450.
6450, yeah.
Good gosh, man. Those things are going for a premium.
Yeah.
On, like, you're looking at 14, 15, $1,800 for some of these.
Yeah.
For a 9mm carbine. That, give me a Kel-Tec Sub 2000 and 5,000 rounds of ammo.
And your change.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So they're going to do the same thing, basically. All right.
But they were.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
well,
Colt.
But that was Benny, and he's got LWRC money, so he can do that.
But they work.
All right, Houston, we're going to take a quick commercial break. Hold on. We'll be right back.
I done ran into my baby and finally found my old blue jean. I done ran into my baby and finally found my old blue jean.
Just so I could say that, but I know, I know, I know, I know that you're gonna be okay anyway. You know there's no rhyme or reason for the way you turned out to be. I didn't go and try to change my mind, not intentionally. I know it's hard to hear me say it, but I can't bear to stay. And I just know, I know, I know, I know that you're gonna be okay anyway. Always keep your heart.
Welcome back to Guns Over Texas, Houston. If you want to get involved in the show, you can call us at 281-558-5738. That's 281-558-5738 and gunsovertexasradio.com, where we will soon be doing videos of the week, and those will hopefully involve both Jason and Gary and I all at the same time, testing guns, shooting guns. Anything you need, tell us what you want to see, and we will take care of that for you and post a video. Now, I'm sure everybody remembers the firestorm of the Moms Demand Action Hags after a High Point firearm was found in a Target store in the toy aisle.
Hold it. Now, I realize this sounds like profiling, but you just told me
it's High Point firearm. I know. They can work. I've seen them. I've seen some that run like that, tops.
Those bullets will tumble down range just as
they
fast.
They do tumble.
But it's a High Point, which tells me that this is not likely to be an upstanding person to begin with.
That's true.
So,
okay. So it's all right. The police officer in the room. High Point, is that a favorite amongst turds?
Yes, okay. Because of the price point,
okay.
For sure.
All right.
But you can
because
see the
bulge.
Because
it's cheaper than a Hot Wheels car.
Yeah, but you can definitely see the bulge in it because it's, you know, we call at the range call it the Big Twinkie or the Black Twinkie because it's big and just
huge.
Like a Big Twinkie.
Yeah. You know, I'd never thought about it, but it does look like
it
a Twinkie.
It looks like a Twinkie.
Now,
it does. It does.
It does.
And
leave
actually.
Leave it to a cop to call it a Twinkie.
Well,
it should look like a donut.
But actually, you know, we had a customer that was shooting one, and I kept going, why are there square holes in the paper? And this is for real. And it was because the bullet was tumbling,
mm-hmm.
and it was making just rectangular
you sure
he wasn't rips.
Shooting 9 out of 45.
No,
positive,
positive,
and it's something I've seen pretty regular on those. But anyway, one of these was found in a toy box in the toy aisle at Target. Moms Demand Action came out blaming Open Carry Texas for this happening. Now, we need to keep something in mind. This Target store was located in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Yet, Moms Demand Action was pointing the finger 1,100 miles away.
To Texas.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so now, earlier this week, we came to find out that a fine, upstanding, felonious citizen of Myrtle Beach who had been...
I love how you put that. Fine, upstanding, felonious.
He came by to collect it?
Well, he couldn't collect it because he was in... You see, he'd already been charged and convicted of armed robbery.
I see.
And he left it there. He must have felt like he was maybe about to get arrested or something.
So
or maybe,
put it in the toy department.
Yeah, maybe he wanted to dump it before stealing, just in case he got caught with theft. I don't know. But we have now found out that a felon who would not pay attention to rules or laws as it is the one responsible for that gun being found in a toy aisle at Walmart. Sorry, I had just received a text message as I was trying to finish that statement off. And Ken in Spring, thank you, sir, for making me choke there for a second. As he says, a High Point is the only alleged firearm that can be legally purchased with a Lone Star or EBT card.
Oh. Wow. That's just, wow. That's, wow, man. That's just mean.
You can see why I stumbled there.
Does he have experience in that or something?
I believe he has some neighbors that do. Yeah. All right, let's head out to Katie and talk to AK Johnny. It's been a long time, Johnny. Welcome back to Guns Over Texas.
Uh-oh. Did you hit the wrong button again?
No.
Let me repeat this.
There we go. So, Johnny, need you start over again. Welcome back.
Oh, yeah, it's been a long time. I haven't called since I don't deliver pizzas anymore.
That's right. You got on as a teacher, didn't you?
Yeah.
So which job is more dangerous?
Well, I got summers off for teaching, so I'm loving this.
Good, man. Congratulations.
Thanks, man. Hey, we went to Lake Conroe for a little vacation, and on the way back off Beltway 8, I saw y'all got a new store or something.
No. We do not have a store.
We have zero affiliation with that store. And that's all we can say. So, not us.
Interesting. Like, wow, y'all didn't really say anything. It's the same name. I mean,
yeah, not us.
Then
it's our name, but it's not us.
That is true. It is our name, not us.
Some douchebags using your name.
Well done.
Well, we didn't say that, but yes, there's someone else using our name.
I got no fun saying it then. I mean, that's.
Now, we're well aware of the situation.
Gotcha. I don't know. I just thought it was weird. Wow, I haven't kept up with them for a while. It's like, wow, you're on a new store. Cool.
Yes, we've had a number of our customers at Shiloh that have been confused about that as well. So, but hopefully we'll have that cleared up in the near future.
Gotcha. All right, just curious about that.
Yep.
So. Awesome.
What else can we do for you?
Made any new purchases lately, Johnny?
Pause. Yeah. Elephant in the room.
Since the 545 got banned, I got a whole bunch of beautiful wood boxes full of it.
How many rounds do you have?
Yeah, 545 by turn. I think 7,000 or 8,000.
All right, good for you. That's a nice start.
Yeah. It's expensive rather quickly, but hey.
Well, I thought they only banned one particular brand of it. I didn't think they banned the entire cartridge.
The cheap
cheapest cartridge, yes.
It used to be about 15 cents a round. Now it's about the same as everybody else, a quarter round.
Yeah.
Yeah, what was the ruling on that, Gary?
Well, the ATF, and I've forgotten who submitted it for this question, but it was a very specific question that was submitted to the ATF, about whether or not 5.45 millimeter by 39 ammo was armor-piercing, mainly because of two or three new handguns that had entered the market. Mm-hmm. So they were AK type handguns that were chambered in 5.45, and the fact that these were handguns, therefore the ATF interpreted it as, well, that's a cartridge built for a handgun, and therefore that particular round is considered armor-piercing and therefore illegal, since under current federal law, armor-piercing handgun ammunition is illegal and so, not available for import.
Probably one manufacturer just screwed it up for everybody?
Actually, it's not even one. Well, there were at least two manufacturers who built 5.45 pistols.
Okay.
And the fact that they did that in and of itself was not a problem. There's nothing wrong with them building. I mean, it's, we build AR pistols all the time. But it was just, I don't remember exactly how it came about, but someone within the government specifically submitted that for a request, and it basically screwed it up for everyone else.
They're trying to get rid of all cheap ammo?
I don't know that it was even just an attempt to get rid of cheap ammo. I think that it was very specific in trying to address these pistols that were coming into the market, and trying to consider that any ammunition for them as being armor-piercing, and therefore trying to find a way to ban the pistol, and they just couldn't do that. So that's what it seems to be. I don't know that for sure. That's conjecture. But that seems to have been part of the angle that brought that about.
On the ATF release, I saw that the pistol that they used to justify banning it is a Polish little pistol, and correct, there's only about 200 of them made.
Right.
None of them are on our shores, so.
Right.
Well, Johnny, we hope everything's going good for you, man, and we look forward to hearing back from you soon.
Awesome. Appreciate it, guys.
Thanks, and congratulations on the new job, Johnny.
Thanks, guys.
All right. That is, man, when that ruling came out a few months ago, I knew that was going to hurt, because you could get 5.45 ammo for, what, about $200 a case?
It's like Johnny said, it was somewhere between 10 and 15 cents a round. And yeah, that ruling hit on April 7th, and basically it was Russian-made 7N6 5.45x39. And yeah, it was a result of, like, you know, Fabrica Brony Radom was the Onyx 89S is one of the pistols that was in question. And I honestly have never even seen that pistol. I didn't think any of them were even in the U.S., but because it existed, because it was out there, the ATF decided to rule on it.
Yeah. All right. Do you have your CHL instructor pants on right now?
Sure.
All right. Let's head out to Huntsville for Joe. Joe, welcome to Guns Over Texas. What do you got for us today?
Well, I have two questions.
Yes, sir.
One, aren't there pistols, or what they call pistols, that fire the 5.56 military round?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
There are.
And isn't there a Thompson Contender that's chambered for 30-30?
Oh, there's Thompson Contenders chambered for 308 and 30-06.
So all of those should be banned because they fire pistols, right?
I wouldn't agree with that, but the ATF could take that stance potentially.
That's the stupidity of the law.
Oh,
the way they wrote it.
Yeah. You mean there's a stupid law?
Oh, yeah.
Never heard of those.
Didn't it come out of Washington?
Yeah.
Isn't it administered by the ATF?
Yeah. Toilets should be flushed along with Congress for the same reasons.
Yeah. Well, so what's the question number two, Joe?
That's the question. Okay. In the pistol chambered for the 5.56, and
yeah, no, there are, but it was, in fact, so I looked up the original special advisory from the ATF, and what that ruling came very specifically from a Customs and Border Patrol request to conduct a test of that specific type of ammunition that was being imported, and as a result of that request, the ATF ruled that it is a full jacketed projectile larger than 22. Basically, they're banning it under the 1968 Gun Control Act, saying that it's 22 caliber projectile larger than 22. Full metal jacket projectile larger than 22 caliber, designed and intended for use in a handgun with a weight more than 25% of the total projectile. The jacket makes more than 25% of the total projectile weight, and that it's designed to be fired from a handgun and potentially penetrate armor. So that's their logic. I don't agree with it, but that's the ruling they made.
I thought he had a question about a 30-06, as in 30-06 sign.
Yes.
Yeah, like a 51% sign or
something.
Well,
Jeff, you had an experience with a Thompson Contender. I think it was a 44.
Yeah, guy about burned down the range shooting explosive targets, the targets that smoke, putting them on a paper target, and then shooting them from about 10 feet away. And I walk into the range, and there is a 23x45 target hanging there on fire.
In an indoor range.
Oh, yeah. And so
was he escorted out?
Oh, he was so scared that he ran, literally ran out the range and left his Thompson Contenders behind.
So you have one?
No. It came and picked him up about 2 months later.
He came to me and said he wanted to explain. I said, no need. Get out of here.
Gee whiz. Yeah, I will say this. Having been in a fire, in a range fire, that is... I don't use the term small fire at all anymore.
The last thing you want to do in an indoor range is to introduce any form of fire whatsoever and to shoot a smoking target from 10 feet away with a 44 caliber.
Taped to a paper target.
Taped to a paper target. You just don't get much dumber.
The phrase walking through hell with gasoline drawers on comes to mind.
But you get all kinds. You know, every day. Every day you get. You know, we had a guy tapping on the glass with his revolver, pointing him at.
For every stupid staff. Rule, there's been a stupid act that spawned that rule.
Exactly. So, I got to go on a hunt this weekend, and
didn't call anybody. Just said, "Hey, let's go hunt."
It was a last minute invite, and
I know who that invite came from. You can tell them that I took that personally.
Hey man, I happened to see him at the vet and he said, "What are you doing this weekend?" You know, "Hey, let's go." So I brought my girlfriend Jackie along, and she didn't know it, but she's about to make her Guns Over Texas debut. And so go ahead and pull the mic up a little closer to your face, tap the on button. There you go. Say hello, Houston.
Hello, Houston.
All right. So she just got commissioned as a police officer, and she's going to be dedicating her life to protecting and serving others, which I find to be very, very admirable.
So not she's going to be arresting you like my every dad week does now, too. Huh?
Not unless she's paying more of the bills. So it was important to me that she got a chance, and some people are going to hear this and think it's sick and disturbing, but this is real life, people. I wanted to make sure that she had the opportunity to take a life, even though, whether it be an animal, before she's out on the street on her own, she needed to know what it felt like. And I think that is a legitimate.
Well, not only what it felt like, but what it can do.
Yeah.
You see it in action.
Yeah. And so our friend from CompTac Holsters with Greg was gracious enough to invite us out, and really we got some top-notch instruction. I mean, as you know, Gary, there's not much better than Greg. He has seen it, he's done it, and he's trained under everybody that you can shake a stick at, and just an outstanding instructor. And so we got to go out and shoot pistols and shoot rifles, long-distance rifles. It was kind of a tough weekend to do that because the winds were going 20 to 25 miles an hour.
And the heat, you're going to have quite a bit of mirage. That's, not an easy shot.
And, when we went out there in February, I was putting 500-yard shots with my 5.56 on steel, regularly. Mm-hmm. We got out there, the wind was so bad, it was hard for me to hit 300 during that. But both of us, and congratulations, Jackie, she got she got one on 500 yards, and it took her less rounds than it took me. So I will give credit where credit is due.
Well, women are naturally better shots, right?
Okay.
No, they follow instruction better.
That's true. Now,
tap the off button on her mic, okay? So we got to do – it was just an outrageously awesome experience, as usual, when we get to go out there. So what we found – her first deer that she got day before yesterday was a black buck, 60 pounds. They are fast as lightning and even faster once they've been shot in the heart. So what we have is a 62-grain center-fire rifle round that has been put through the heart of an animal, a 60-pound animal, at twice the velocity of a handgun round, at least twice the velocity of a handgun round. And, Jackie, what happened when you shot it?
She was pretty quick to zigzag all over the place. She didn't really make it very far because of that, but she still was a good distance away. We didn't see her right off the bat.
At least about 100, 150 yards away, and she covered that ground in no time. So you, when you shot it, you didn't know whether or not you had hit it. I had my binoculars on it, and I could see arterial bleeding. You know, there was definitely a spray happening, so I knew that you got it, and you got it good. Now, I can't say enough. If you are using a 50, or if you are using a 5.56 as a defensive gun, as a hunting gun, the Fusion MR2 is what she was using, and it's what I used last time. Mm-hmm. We are now 5 for 5 on one shot, and it's producing some really, really good results when you open up the animal and see what's inside. So you not only shot it, and after the black buck was hit, like she said, it took off, it zigzagged, it went two different directions. It confused the dog.
Tracer?
Yeah, Tracer. He's 6 months old, awesome little dog, and he found it. He found the deer this morning.
Good deal.
Before we did. Yeah. He was right out of that Polaris and on the trail. It was awesome. But anyway, this black buck, different directions, and then straight back and out of sight. So if that's what happens with a centerfire rifle round fired into a 60-pound animal, do you think that your 9mm 40-45 is going to stop somebody right off the bat? I doubt
it. Yep.
So hold on, Houston. We'll be back with more Guns Over Texas. Welcome back to about the last 10 minutes of Guns Over Texas today, Houston. If you have questions or comments, you want to get involved, like I said, you got about 10 minutes left. So you can give us a call at 281-558-5738. That's 281-558-5738. Have you ever done anything so stupid on a hunt that you just really want to, if you could kick yourself in your face, you would do it?
Yes, it was, I shot a boy when I thought I was shooting a girl, so.
I remember hearing that from about 1,600 yards away.
Jeff, there's a shoe print on your forehead.
So, like I said, Jackie and I were on this hunt, and Greg really wanted us to get an axis, because for those of you that don't know, Axis is the filet mignon.
Yes, but they also breed year round.
They do. And they are also extremely hard to find.
Yes.
Because when whitetail and some of these other deer, black buck, will get out and mill around during the day under heavy winds, Axis do not. They stay in the trees because they can't hear what's going on out there with that heavy wind. So they are very leery.
No, they're smart.
They are smarter than the average deer. Okay. So we were looking for one all day on Friday. And finally, Greg said, you know what? Just get this black buck. Let's get one of those. So she got it. And then all morning Saturday, we were out. Nothing. The axis were moving, but they were moving stealthily. So we go back. We work some pistols. We do some long-range shooting. I got to shoot a compound bow finally, which for any of you bow folks, we are going to have archery at Shiloh Shooting Range here shortly. So we are working on getting that done. So keep that in mind. But got to shoot that compound bow. And then afterwards, we went out for our evening hunt. And we drove around and drove around and drove around. Couldn't find anything that wasn't, you know, couldn't find anything shootable. Could not find an axis. They were nowhere to be seen. So we went up into a blind and we waited about 45 minutes. And just as I'm starting to think, oh, this is going to be a futile effort to get this axis, Jackie spies some feet or some legs going through a opening in the trees way out beyond us, about 150 yards out. And so we start counting. And oh my goodness, there are 17 sets of legs. 17 axes. We have hit the mother load. And so they finally start coming out into the open. We've been counting legs for 30 minutes before they actually came out into the clearing. So now here they come, tons of them. There are 17, and I see just one buck. And it was a glamorous buck, huge antlers. But all the rest were doe. And, of course, that's what we're hunting, right, mm-hmm. is axis doe. All of them are doe. So we have the pick of the litter. And I think to myself, man, I got to make sure that these are actually axis and not whitetail. We don't want to do something stupid and shoot a whitetail. So I go.
Yeah, illegal.
That's why I said stupid. And so I get on the walkie-talkies with Greg, and I go to say let me ask you this real quick. And I hit the call button. And you would think call would call the other walkie-talkie.
No.
What it should say is ring. Ring like a wild banshee. And so my natural reaction is to hang it up. So what do? When you hang it up, you press the same button again. No, it didn't hang up. It rang again. Yes. So now I'm frantically pressing the same darn button about 7 times, and I'm stuffing this thing in between my butt and the chair trying to get it to shut up.
And you don't have enough butt to shut it up.
I did not. And so they looked right over at us and then just kind of went, we're going to go somewhere else, and then trotted off into the trees. So we got on it again this morning, and she got it. So she was able to get her axis doe, got a beautiful one, 92-pound axis doe. It's going to produce lots of meat for us. How did you feel when it happened, Jackie?
The first one?
Yeah.
I was surprised. I felt a little guilty, and I kind of just stood there and was listening to y'all talk and say, I got a good shot. And, you know, no smiles. I was just... There's that doe lying on the ground, and I kind of felt bad for a minute there. But as soon as we started cleaning her up and, you know, getting all the meat out, it kind of became more surgical and more, mm-hmm. you know, that's more food. Second one, I was completely fine. So I got over it.
And the second one.
And now the axis population in Texas is in danger.
The second one was a broadside double lung shot with that mm-hmm. Fusion MR2, and it left a big keyhole on the exit. So it definitely did a little yawing in there. And the doe, it got off into the bushes, but not far. It didn't go as far as the black buck, which really surprised me because it was lung shot versus heart shot. So was really cool was Tracer, the 6-month-old dog, was on that scent in no time, was able to get to that doe before we even knew where he was. So, and when we finally found him, he was dominantly posturing on top of the doe to let her know who daddy was. So, really cool trip. If you've never been, you have got to go. You've got to experience it. All right, let's head out to Hempstead for Mike. Mike, welcome to Guns Over Texas.
Hey, Jeff.
What's happening?
Question about your comment about the SB-15 SIG brace and mm-hmm. AR lowers registered as pistol.
Mm-hmm.
Last two lowers I've ordered in, my dealer said that they classify as pistol, receiver, or rifle.
Right.
And he contacted his ATF guy and said it doesn't really matter if it's a bare receiver, call it a receiver. And what you do after that is your business. Who's wrong here?
If it's a bare receiver?
It's a bare receiver.
Yes, so it's just a stripped receiver.
Yeah. Those are logged in as receiver.
Okay.
Okay.
So
choose to build it as.
So
I choose
you can just
to?
Build it as what you want?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So there you go. So
if it becomes a pistol,
then
that's what it is. And
yeah, but
and I'm okay
it better be a pistol. Yeah.
Yeah.
Putting a SIG on it?
Yeah. So put the SIG stabilizing brace on it. Do not get cute and think that you can get away with putting a stock on it because that gets people in trouble. So,
but it's a receiver, it's a receiver.
Correct. But
this is a gray area. I don't understand.
It's all about the configuration of it.
Okay.
So pistol, the barrel, once you get below 16 inches.
Right. I put 11 and a half upper.
If it's an 11 and a half upper, then it needs to be configured as a pistol to be legal.
Yeah.
But do you call it a receiver on the 4473 or is it a pistol?
It's called a receiver on the 4473. But once you go to get your
here's the deal. If he were to transfer it after that, if he were to sell it after that point, it is sold then as a pistol, if I'm not mistaken.
Nothing ever gets sold.
There you go.
There you go.
As long as it hasn't previously been logged as a rifle, you're fine.
Okay.
Okay.
That's
and
my understanding. I just want a clarification from your dealer perspective.
Yeah, and then look at the KAC Industries extensions, pistol buffer tubes, and the extensions. And those really help out because that stabilizing brace is set right up against the rear of the receiver once you get that thing on there. But if you get this pistol buffer tube from KAC Industries and you put some extensions on there, it's really like having one, two, or three on a regular stock. Positions one, two, or three.
Quite cool.
Okay, so it makes it a much more usable setup.
Very good.
All right. Have fun, Mike.
Thanks.
All right. Gary, you got any training tips before we close this sucker out?
You know, I keep telling people, dry fire, dry fire, dry fire. I went out to the range this morning. I actually wanted to work movement, but I actually rolled my ankle in Krav this week, so I was unable to run.
Mm-hmm.
So I just spent a little bit of time just doing dry fire practice with my reloads. Not a single shot fired, but got my reload down with my timer. Down to about a second and a half for a slide-like reload, which ain't bad.
All right, and I'll keep it short and sweet. Say, hold on tight. Torque that gun as you're holding on to it,
indeed,
and you can run that thing like a sewing machine. So I found that I hadn't been gripping quite hard enough.
Yep.
And so now when I'm done shooting, I want my forearms to be ready to explode.
Yeah.
Not only that,
if you've been shooting for about 10 minutes and you don't feel any tension, then yeah, you haven't been gripping hard enough.
Yeah. All right, Houston, that is 2 hours of Guns Over Texas Down. If you don't have your concealed handgun license yet, get it now at Shiloh Indoor Shooting Range. You can call them at 281-444-8930 and sign up today. That'll do it, Houston. Shoot straight.